Hello, this is Gregory Kofsky, Mergers and Acquisitions Intermediary with IBA. I've been selling family-owned businesses and privately-owned companies for 27 years for the oldest business brokerage firm in the Pacific Northwest. If you want to learn how to transform your sales team from an order taker to a quota breaker, significantly increase your revenue and create a scalable sales system, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. On the Authentic Persuasion Show with me today is Gregory Kofsky. Gregory has worked in the professional mergers and acquisition intermediary business for IBA since the spring of 1994. In 2000, he purchased the company from its founder and became his successor as the CEO and president of the firm. I'm really excited to chat with him because he is in the business of helping businesses. He's also been in sales himself for a long time, and he has facilitated over 300 transactions individually over the last 27 years. His firm has done over 4,200 deals, mostly in the Pacific Northwest. And so here we go. This should be a lot of fun. Gregory, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So like I said, I am excited because you have many perspectives, internal, external, what's working for you, what's working for businesses outside that you're helping. One of the things that we had talked about in advance, and I thought would be a fun place to start, is what you consider the golden rule. So people or businesses or salespeople employing the golden rule in professional sales. So let's start with that. Share your thoughts around that.
Certainly, the philosophy that I embrace in life, both professionally and personally, is the golden rule, which is a principle that is found in virtually every culture around the world, which is basically do unto others as you want them to do unto you. And in a sales perspective, something we've talked about and I believe is important is to periodically virtually get up from the table, walk to the other side, and look at the deal from the opposite side. And it doesn't matter whether you're buying or selling a business, which I do, or buying or selling a car that you've owned for 5 years and you want to sell and move on to a new vehicle, you need to look at it from both sides of the table and make sure the deal's fair and honest.
I really like that. Now, on one side, I tell everyone, obviously, golden rule, mutual respect, courtesy, those kind of things are important. Salespeople, a lot of times, can fall under the trap of the golden rule being selling to other people like you like to be sold to, which is going to limit your effectiveness. But I really like what you're focused on, which is the sake of the deal, the transaction of what's going on, is selling to someone and being fair and win-win and not at somebody's expense to win. But what is it like from both sides of the table? And can you stand by that deal long-term, right?
Correct. In our business, we look at it from a business development perspective in that, like people who are employed, most people who own businesses own them an average of 7 years. So even though we represent the seller side of the transaction, we believe if the buyer believes they were treated fairly, that they will return to us 7 years from now, we've been in business 45, that to sell the business. And that is the ultimate compliment you can get as a broker, is if someone who's on the other side of the table from you comes back and says, I was treated fairly and now wants you to sell their company.
That's so fascinating because very few industries, is there the opportunity for that kind of reciprocation from a client down the road? One thing I think of is maybe real estate, where a realtor helps sell a house. The buyer has it down the road. They want to use that same realtor to turn around and sell that house. A lot of other sales opportunities, you don't have that. Like, you want referrals, but it's usually not a client coming back and then spinning it around. And for me, that's a huge shift in your long-term thinking, right? I mean, where do you see resistance to that? Or where have you seen salespeople or anybody struggle with kind of that attitude?
Certainly. So I think there's an inclination with any salesperson to focus on the monetary element. And I've always been a believer that if you work hard, honest, and provide quality representation, money will take care of itself. So I think where the challenge is if people have a here and now, an I perspective, no long-term view, that they can fall into the wrong trends as far as what are their priorities in representation.
Got it. Makes sense. And it's always that balance in the short term and the long term. Obviously, you want salespeople who are motivated financially or something that motivates them. Usually it's financially first and trickles down to something bigger, but then also looking at the transactions long term. What kind of verbiage do you use or language, or how do you teach your reps to virtually mentally get up from their side of the table and go to the other side, either in the conversation or just in their head?
Good question. It starts with picking the right people. I mean, I do a multiple meeting interview process for potential brokers and really want to understand their background. And Jason, you probably know this, that you interviewing people about nothing about the job, hearing what they did growing up, their experiences in college, their employment experiences, digging a little bit, people show their stripes in the stories, what they're proud of. A simple test, I am blessed, I've been married 20 years to my wife, is if you're successful in marriage, it shows that you build successful, long-term, trusting, giving relationships. And if you can succeed in that environment, and obviously marriages fail because one side or the other, often not both sides, but it can be a mutual failure, is it speaks to you. Your interaction with your kids, your friends, do you have still friends from high school? Again, you must be a quality person if you're doing a boys' weekend with your friends from high school and you've been doing it 30 years, those sort of things.
Very interesting. And so obviously part of it is picking that right person, setting it up correctly. And then what do you tell them or what do you provide to them? I guess, what's the verbiage you use in that sales transaction to get over to the other side of the table mentally? Is there anything specifically that you're doing with the person you're negotiating with and saying or doing?
I mean, we work very hard in our deals to build environments of full disclosure and transparency, to emphasize best practices, to give them resources. I have a buyer interested in a cannabis business I'm representing for sale right now. Because of federal law, you actually can't get loans from any national banks. So this buyer may or may not ultimately buy the business from IBA, but I put him in contact with some state chartered banks who actually are lending money in the cannabis industry. And so I was building a relationship with the buyer and trying to give them the tools to be successful. And taking a step back, we talked about how a 7-year cycle on average, a business resale. Well, we also have interested parties watching our deals. And those are CPAs, attorneys, banks. They are also our referral partners. So we need to operate with integrity and best practices throughout the process, or that symbiotic community that we operate in isn't going to want to operate with us and do deals with us. So we need a CPA at a recognized firm to say either my client, you should talk to IBA as part of your interview process in selecting a broker, or if they have a client who's buying a business, say, well, this is good. They're going to create an environment of full disclosure, use best practices. I think you couldn't be buying a business from a better party. So those type of relationships, I believe strongly, as I know you do, you only get one reputation. And in our business, that's all we have is the firm's reputation. And I tell each of my brokers, when you talk about training them, first they need to sell themselves. People don't hire IBA. They hire first the individual broker. You then sell the firm and our resources and experience. I don't want anything occurring in the public domain that damages the individual broker's reputation or the firm's reputation. And honestly, that is the only reason I've terminated someone from my firm in recent years, is because they were crossing over, using a Star Wars analogy, to the dark side. And they hadn't done anything to damage it yet. But despite sales management and guidance, they weren't changing their practices. And I decided, rather than have a negative outcome, I was going to make a proactive. And actually, the party who I did let go relocated to another state, and we remain friends to this day. And the party's even thanked me for the wake-up call. And he has gone on for success in other industries since that time, because sometimes people need honesty and tough love. And it's often not the person who gives you the attaboy, but the person who sits you down and says, I want to mentor, I want to teach you. You can learn from this, the teachable moment that you really remember and value later in life.
Yeah, that is the interesting part about human nature, is you're more likely to learn and take something long term with you in, I'm not going to say just a negative consequence, but something that's not just the high fives and the wonderful things. It's more the falling down and then learning how to get back up. And there's so much in what you shared that I love. Part of it is being secure and confident and focused on your business and the long-term aspect and the culture you want it to be known for internally and externally, such that you have a certain tolerance and you won't let anybody exceed that for what you find is acceptable. I mean, a lot of sales organizations get into the trap of, well, they want top salespeople and they're willing to put up with their toxic attitude or their bad sales or whatever they're bringing to the table. And looking at the short term, the scarcity minded, we want the sales more than we want to do the right thing, if you will. So I think that's great that you did that. And the other part that I love is you're not just accountable internally. I think what's made you successful as a company long term for this many years is what you said about being accountable to the CPAs, the lawyers, to everyone out in the community that you're working with as partners. And you're accountable to them, which means you've got to do the right thing, so that they're still a part of your, let's say, family of what you're doing as an organization.
Certainly. I mean, I think it resonates with your book. I mean, what I described is just being authentic. You most definitely, you know, that's why I said you start with selling yourself. I don't want you to tell my story. I tell my story when I work with a client. Tell your story. I mean, I have a broker who owned three little gym franchises. And he works in the education sector and does a really good job. I have a broker, business development vice president, who was an officer on a submarine in the Navy. I have another one who worked in the construction industry selling pipe to deal with rain drainage on a Costco parking lot. So each of them in different industries has different authentic stories that different demographics of people connect with And I want them to be themselves. You don't ask a leopard to be a zebra. It's impossible.
And I love that so much because that goes back to what you were saying a few minutes ago with the selection process, the hiring process, what you're looking for, and you know what works, and then you know what you're looking for from a cultural fit such that you know that you hire somebody and you want them to be authentic, right? You're not trying to turn everyone into mini Gregory robots that sell the way you do and have your story and all talk about the party line. You want them to be them, and you want to trust that they will do their best from a great authentic place and persuade and do all of that. And that's what you've built so far. So other business brokers, people who are in similar spaces to you, where are they usually missing the mark?
Well, I think the obvious is focusing on the commission and their personal outcome on the sale. I actually think also in getting unity of purpose with the client and actually with the buyer in our world. There are two dominant business models in business brokerage. Our model is similar to a realtor, where we're paid on performance when we complete the sale. We don't charge any retainers or administrative fees. We don't collect a penny until the deal is completed and our client is happy. I always say we only get paid by satisfied customers. It's the way, in theory, all business should be. The second model is companies charge retainers and administrative fees up front. And I understand why they do it as a business model. Getting paid on a deal 3 to 9 months after it goes to market is difficult from a cash flow standpoint. You need to have a volume of deals. As a firm, close 3 to 7 deals a month. So we have that volume, but the smaller offices, they may starve and die trying to employ that model. And so they will charge the fee up front. And they're very honorable firms, I know, that employ that model. And at the end of the day, the net cost to the client is the same. So it's not bad from an honorable, integrity-based representation. Where the error often occurs, the first step at any sale process is business valuation. And when we value a business because our business model doesn't work unless we complete the sale, we have a vested interest in honesty with the client. And buyers actually like it because it's a price that they can justify, their CPA or a bank can justify. So at the end game, it ends up being positive all around. The error some firms make in business brokerage that charge retainers and administrative fees is they want a happy customer when that customer writes the check. And the check can be 4, 5, I've even seen 6-figure retainers for larger deals, where they are writing a check and making a commitment. And so rather than having a hard conversation on value and being honest, they want a happy customer when they're writing that check. So they don't have that conversation and they create false expectations, which then need to be dealt with down the line in negotiations. And it can be very, very frustrating for a business buyer who, let's say, along with their CPA, valued a business at $2.5 million. If they're on the market at $3.2 million, getting them together is very difficult. And it's not the business owner's fault. They probably went in the process a blank slate, didn't know what their business was worth. So they trusted the professional who gave them the answer. And it's one of my biggest frustrations in this industry. And every year we sell businesses that have been listed with other firms where they've charged retainers. And a year or two later, no sale has been completed. they're frustrated, they get referred to us, and we complete the sale.
And again, and I want to reiterate, and I heard you say this, which is great, there's nothing wrong with the retainer model, but the challenge is, and I can correlate this to my experience in real estate, especially residential real estate, where realtors, they want the listing so bad, they agree what the homeowner thinks their house is worth, which is always higher because everyone always thinks their baby is the cutest and is going to be an Olympian rock star, next billionaire. And so the realtor agrees, gets the listing, and then it just never sells or it becomes drama later on. And that applies to everybody in sales, but the really just comes down to kind of somebody who's not secure and confident enough in their sales process and sales skills to have that tough conversation, because they're worried if they have the tough conversation, the person's just not going to agree with them up front.
Exactly. And people come to salespeople often as experts. And my wife and I recently bought a new range and a new refrigerator for our home. The appliance person, who I genuinely liked, was the expert. I didn't know one brand versus the other. I knew it was a big purchase for us. We like to cook, but they needed to share with me the benefits in relationship to the cost of the different options and allow us to make an intelligent decision as a purchaser. So it doesn't just need to be businesses. Like we talked about, being authentic, being knowledgeable, sharing your experience with the customer so that at the end of the day, they complete the acquisition, but they're happy, not just when they leave the sale, but 2 years from now, they're talking about that. I bought the car from you, the house from you, the refrigerator from you, and they were great, and they send their sister-in-law there who needs a refrigerator.
Yeah, and I think that's always the key, right, is thinking that long-term. Whether or not you ever talk to that person or get a referral, but just doing what you can with the right intention long-term for the client and for everyone involved, I think is the key. So you touched on authenticity, which is great. Where do you see persuasion fitting in to what has made you successful or your sales rep successful in that process?
Touching on something that's kind of interesting with us. So persuasion, people do business with people they like, know, and trust. Very old standard. Well, one thing we've done at IBA is there's a very large immigrant entrepreneurial community. We work with a number of first generation, second generation immigrants into the United States, and their language may not be English as a first language. Okay. So on my team, I have people who speak Spanish, Russian, a couple dialects of Indian, German, who have the ability to persuade and communicate in another language. And I think the persuasion is, and this is kind of obvious example, but you've got to speak the people's language. In order to have a message that resonates, you need to talk their language. You don't talk MBA financial verbiage to someone who didn't go to college, but maybe learned to be a mechanic and built a great auto repair shop with many hoists and loyal customers. You've got to change your language, your messaging, to resonate with them. They're a smart person, and you need to be able to communicate with them so they understand and you can persuade them to go the direction necessary to achieve their goals. Where reverse around, if the person has the MBA, you may need dozens of spreadsheets to communicate the exact same message, because if you're not talking about debt service coverage ratios, they're not getting the message on how that relates to the price, because using debt service coverage ratios, if a business has a profit, well, that profit to pay back the bank on a loan needs to be substantial enough to pay back the loan and yet still give the buyer of the business an income to support their family and their lifestyle. So for a certain buyer, understanding, I would love to sell your business for $10 million. Unfortunately, sure, earning $1 million a year, if they put $2 million down and got financing for $8 million, tell me how they service that debt.
Yeah.
If they can't show up with the bag of gold to buy the business, then neither of us achieve our goals.
And that goes into the authenticity part and doing what's transparent for everybody and making sure it's going to be successful, right? Not overpromising and then being stuck with this transaction that's not going anywhere. It's fascinating you talk about the language, because obviously, you know, from reading the book and what we've talked about, is I focus on that a lot where salespeople fall short, which is they're not giving the other person what they need, right? They're just looking at it how they are. And you talked about the MBA type of person, where that salesperson, a lot of times, if they're not careful, they will not be relevant to most of the people they talk to, because that's not what they want from somebody. They want something different. And it's fascinating to hear you talk about it on a purely language level, not just like a language, conversation, emotional empathy level, but actual language of what the other person wants. And it's a great analogy. Instead of like, okay, well, I only speak English, and so I don't care what you want, you better fit into my framework. Instead, it's like, what do you need? What would help you feel comfortable? How can I speak with you and then have this transaction be successful, because I'm providing you with what you need?
Correct. I mean, I know my Spanish-speaking broker who joined me from Microsoft with a lot of M&A type experience. He has actually got, I believe, physical as well as virtual hugs from his clients, because you get a concept like the tax implications of the sale. Try understanding that if you've got to translate that verbiage into a second language in your mind, where if with a pen and paper on a yellow pad, he can map it out in Spanish and explain that if we call it goodwill, we can pay 10% less in taxes than if we call the component a non-competition agreement. People need that explanation. They deserve it. This is often the most valuable possession they have in their life, maybe other than their home. And it's the ability to communicate. So we all can make good decisions if we have good information. And that's really where we focus on providing knowledge to both sides of the table so they can make adult decisions. I mean, in our world, no one makes an impulse purchase of a business. It's a life change. So forget the hard close and the sale. It's a consultative sale over a long horizon.
Shifting just a little bit, because this is the part where I'm also fascinated and I wanted to talk to you about, is you're in the business transaction business, right? Business brokerage. So you're seeing companies, owners who want to sell, other people who are buying. What are the companies doing well that are going to sell, that they put themselves in a good spot to sell, and they have the best chance of having something that's worth it, what they want, and then also what somebody else is going to buy?
Certainly. Well, you want to make the transition of ownership easy for the buyer. So if you're selling a car, it's always best practice to get it detailed and go on the market, having it looking good. You don't have the Cheerios your kids spilled in the back seat. Same thing with a business. You want your financial records in order. You want your contracts, your agreements in order. You want your employee manual up to date. So those sort of things are critical. Also, running your business like you're going to run it forever, in the sense that ours is a long horizon sale. And so you could go to market today and we could close in May of next year. The business can't look like it's going out of business or not make decisions in the best interest of the business. So that is really critical. And weathering the storm, like we're in the COVID-19 storm right now. And I am in admiration that I see entrepreneurs. I look at business like the ultimate competitive sport, and you are seeing the best entrepreneurs in the United States rise to the top in this storm by pivoting. Restaurants, which we can't go into like we did a year ago. Some of them are thriving with delivery and takeout models. Others closed their doors and gave up the game. They didn't even try. So those type of opportunities, you look at the entrepreneur who looks at the problem, and I would say the same thing about a salesperson. It doesn't matter the product. If a buyer approaches you, wants information, there's a desire to buy. So you need to listen and respond to their objections and their concerns. And as long as you keep them talking, as long as you keep engaged, the sale isn't dead. My mentor, Bill Osofsky, who started IBA, he always said, and you probably heard this, you have 2 ears and one mouth. You should listen twice as much as you talk. You talk about what I teach my brokers, that very basic principle, I believe, goes a long way in sales.
And that's it. Like, if there's one thing, because people always ask me, what's the one thing that would help? What you just said, 2 ears, one mouth, ask questions, listen twice as much as you're talking. And then I'm so glad you brought up salespeople relative to entrepreneurs doing the same thing to be successful. And I said the same thing when COVID was happening. The best are going to find a way, right? The others are just going to curl up in the corner. And for salespeople in a transaction, good times or bad times, faced with a challenge, with somebody who has objections, who wants information, who may or may not buy, but you know that they should, right? It's that square peg in a square hole, you can help solve their problem or achieve their goal. Then it's the ones who are tenacious and creative that will just find a way. Like the restaurants right now, where literally I'll go to a restaurant and you're sitting at plastic tables in a parking lot now because that's all they can do because they can't do it indoors. And like you said, then the one next door is closed up because they just didn't want to be creative and didn't want to be tenacious. For salespeople, it's the same thing. That's the biggest quality.
And I think I'll share one of my favorite stories in COVID. And I thought it was really smart. An HVAC company owner I know, we were talking, and most people are familiar with the PPP loans. Well, what he decided to do this summer, because under the PPP loan, you can pay labor with that loan. So what he decided to do was to offer customers free installation with the purchase of an air conditioner. And he was getting paid for that installation, so he wasn't damaged. He could pay his people to do that work. He could serve his customers and create a win-win transaction, which to me was all perfect entrepreneurship. He was taking a time and place opportunity, utilizing the tools available to resonate with a customer who this summer was hot in their home and maybe was debating whether to get that new air conditioner. But if there was a price discount because they didn't have to pay for installation, maybe that bridged the gap and got them to put on their credit card.
And not harming the business. So they're not doing it at a loss. It's a win-win for everybody, you know, in the opportunity, and it's going to build some goodwill long-term. So final shift here, some personal questions for you. What did you want to be when you grew up?
A basketball coach.
Okay. And why was that? Where did that come from?
I grew up in Portland, Oregon, home of the Trailblazers, was a young kid when Jack Ramsey led them to their only championship. We're still waiting. And loved Dr. Jack and loved the game. It's like a dynamic chess game with real people, with strategy on the fly. So it was cerebrally one of the most amazing thing, and actually pursued it for 4 years post-college, coaching before falling back on my business degree and going into sales.
Gotcha. I was going to ask if you did something with it. So that's interesting. You went down that route. What would you say is your most non-sales job that you've ever had? Basketball coaching is probably full of sales, so I'm going to guess it wasn't that.
It is. Basketball coaching actually helped me incredibly because I coached at a junior college in Kansas, and there's nothing more intangible to be selling than a junior college education to a high school athlete. There's no difference between most junior colleges. You're just selling yourself. So ask me non-sales. I would say while I was in college at the University of Texas, I delivered ice. When the bars and restaurants would run out of ice during the summer, we used to roll up in a truck from an ice house and deliver 40-pound bags because your iced tea needs your ice or it's not iced tea. And iced tea basically makes Texas run.
What is your personal definition of success?
Good question. Touching on what I said earlier, my 20-year marriage, my two kids who are growing up healthy and happy, I'd say that is my ultimate definition of success. But professionally, I am achievement motivated. So having the buyer and seller achieve their goals in a transaction, and as a side benefit, if I can pick up friends down the line out of the transaction, that's good all around.
That's awesome. Which then leads into my final question. Which one, the journey or the destination?
Good question. I would say the journey.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I have my thoughts. I think there's a blend of both. I think you have to have some kind of destination. I think in different points of your life, the journey is the main part. Some destination's nice. Just don't get too attached to either one. I think it's always in flux.
I think it would be perspective, though, on how you define journey, because yeah. I look at life, and when that journey is to its destination, there is no more.
There is that part, right? Like, are we talking micro journey or are we talking the ultimate journey or destination, right?
It's just kind of how you view life and your perspective.
Exactly. Gregory, thanks for being on the Authentic Persuasion Show. As I expected, this was lots of fun. I appreciate all of your information.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.